From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, October 15th. I'm John Myers from KQED and the California Report, and Anthony York, editor of Capital Weekly, blogger for the LA Times, and excited about payday. Didn't you say the 15th is payday?
No. I'm really excited about the fact that it's only 18 days until Election Day.
Ha, yes.
Yes.
Soon we will pivot from what will happen to what did happen to... then we get to go back to the budget, Anthony.
Yeah,
wouldn't that be fun?
At least...
Be careful what you wish for.
I know, right?
Really, really, really. Because either one of these candidates is going to come back and talk about the budget probably soon.
And I hear that Meg Whitman has a vacation planned in Iowa this winter. No, just kidding.
Oh.
Just a little joke.
I was thinking, why Iowa? Even if, like, I was thinking, even if it was a joke, why? What's her connection to Iowa?
Did you figure that one out?
No.
What happens in Iowa?
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Caucuses. Man.
Jeez.
Gosh.
Come on, Myers.
I am slow to the take on this Friday. So we're going to talk about the governor's race because we've put that budget to bed, even though the governor did some vetoes and, you know, but you've heard about that now. Let's talk about the governor's
race. Sure. You read about it in Capital Weekly. CapitalWeekly.net.
You did.
Capital with an O.
I don't think. Anyway. The debate Tuesday night was the last debate.
Yes.
At lovely Dominican University. And it was lovely. I've never been there before.
No. Who knew there was such a thing?
It's quite a serene setting in comparison to the not-so-serene nature of this race right now, or the debate, even.
Yeah. Or Fresno, even. I mean, the last debate was not serene from a reporter's perspective.
No, it wasn't. You weren't there, but I was there, and it was sweltering.
I don't do Fresno. So,
what?
Not on Saturdays.
You're going to insult an entire group of people, just like you're going to get yourself in trouble like the Detroit comment. Anyway.
Yes.
So a debate in Marin County on Tuesday. Tom Brokaw is the moderator of this one-hour back and forth.
Hop along, as I call him.
Yeah. He had broken his ankle on his ranch in Montana. I saw some people taking ice packs out to the stage literally like 20 minutes before it started. So I think the guy was hurting.
But, yeah. He persevered.
Yeah, the rest of us had to hurt through the entire thing, which, by the way, we're the only people who watched it because everyone else watched the Chilean miners being rescued.
Yes. In fact, Jerry Brown apparently offered to put himself into a metal capsule, but that didn't pan out.
He offered to go down there.
That's right.
Maybe Meg Whitman could have offered to write a check to help cover some of the recovery
costs.
No,
she was just going to cut the miners' pension benefits.
You've got some. Wow. You came loaded with this
one. I guess so.
The Chilean miner podcast.
Why? How do you know I'm loaded?
Okay. Anyway, right. We could go so many ways with that. So, what do you make of the debate, Anthony? You know, I hate the game of winners, losers, and I actually think at this point, not only this race, but in a lot of politics, it's impossible to declare unless someone obviously does something wonderful or horrible. And there were up and down moments for both candidates.
Right. I do think generally, you know, this was probably Brown's weakest performance of the three.
And Whitman's stronger of the
right,
three.
Yeah. Right. But again, whether or not that matters, you know, I don't know. You know, the race is close. I think most tracking polls, most polls that I've heard about have Brown up slightly, anywhere from 3 to 8 points, depending on whose invisible numbers you believe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that this debate makes a whole lot of difference. I just don't know to what extent the national tide plays an impact in California. If Republicans finish strong nationally, you know, does that somehow influence the vote in California? I guess.
Well, the polling has not suggested that the tide is that big of a deal here,
right?
Because the polling suggests the president is still popular.
Jerry Brown sure thinks so because the president's coming out to campaign.
Yeah. But even if you look at the polling, the president's approval ratings are still pretty good here. Individual members of Congress, not so great. Feinstein's holding her own. These are old poll numbers now from several weeks ago, but nonetheless. You don't see that kind of anger. I mean, if anything, the anger it seems like you get from the California electorate is they're just angry at the state of things,
and,
not necessarily at Democrats per se.
And I wonder if this, we might see a split even within the state results where there are a lot more congressional races up for grabs than there are state races. I mean, the polling has indicated the U.S. Senate race that Barbara Boxer has I don't want to say a comfortable lead, but if we were to qualify the race, it probably is leaning Democratic at this point. You look at the legislative races. I mean, there are races like Alison Huber's assembly race in the 10th district that you know, Alison Huber
that's
won.
Very micro from where we were.
Well, but what I'm saying, I'm trying to draw the comparison here, that here was a race that was a previously Republican district where a Democrat won in 2008 by only 300 votes. And this year, it seems like she's going to win going away. And you know, you would have thought the conventional wisdom would be, hey, she only won that seat because there was a Democratic tidal wave. But you contrast that with what's going on in the congressional races, races like the Loretta Sanchez's race in Orange County or some of the Central Valley seats that are up for grabs. And Republicans might make some inroads cutting into Democratic majorities in Congress, but might actually not gain seats or perhaps even lose a seat in the legislature.
But I think that therein is a point to make, which is that these kinds of things would be case by case,
right,
rather than a systemic or large tide, which, you know, again, if in fact that's the strategy, if you're the Meg Whitman team, that you need that tide to help you overcome the registration disadvantage, plus some of your positions on some of the issues, that you know, that may not be there. And I think you're right. I mean, I've heard the same thing. A lot of those tracking polls showing Brown still a little bit ahead doesn't mean that Whitman couldn't change that.
Right.
Because it's not some huge lead from what we hear. But anyway.
Well, and if Whitman's going to cobble together a victory, it's going to have to, you know, she's going to have to, you know, take every few votes that she can. I mean, we saw this week she launched campaign ads in Mandarin and Cantonese. I mean, you know, 12 votes here, 100 votes there, 360 votes down there. I mean, that's sort of the micro-targeting strategy of the Whitman campaign, and we'll see the first Tuesday in November whether that strategy, you know, pans out or not.
You know, those ads directed toward suburban white guys wearing blue shorts, which is my neighborhood, anyway.
Blue shorts.
Yes.
Well, they have like cut-off jeans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, well.
Well, there you go. While mowing your lawn.
Mowing my lawn. So let's talk about the debate just for a little bit, highs and lows of the debate. There's been a lot of discussion about the audio tape and the apology and the W word.
Yes.
We can say the whore word. You know, it's very strange what words you can and can't say anymore, but apparently that one
you
can say.
Channeling George Carlin. Maybe you should link to that.
Yeah, maybe so.
You know, you can say you prick your finger, but not. Never
anyway,
mind.
Thank you. And now testing the limits of the podcast, Anthony York across the studio. But, why don't we play this little segment here of this? I mean, everybody's heard it, but let's play the whole thing out, the Brokaw question, too, and then we'll come back.
Mr. Brown, you did attempt to reach out to the police union. The telephone message was left on. It's now a notorious part of this campaign in which somebody in your campaign referred to Ms. Whitman as a whore. A campaign spokesman then described that as salty language and apologized after a fashion. We've heard no outrage from you about the use of that kind of language, which to many women is the same as calling an African-American the N-word. Have you been in charge of the investigation of your campaign to find out who was responsible for using that phrase?
I don't agree with that comparison, number one. Number two, this is a five-week-old private conversation picked up on a cell phone with a garbled transmission, very hard to detect who it is. This is not, I don't want to get into the term and how it's used, but I will say the campaign apologized promptly, and I affirm that apology tonight.
You're repeating it to Ms. Whitman?
Yes, I am. I do. It's unfortunate. I'm sorry it happened. I apologize, Ms. Whitman.
So what I was struck by, and I think you had to have been struck by this too, is he did not handle that well.
Who, Brokaw?
Brown.
Oh, no.
Brown.
He did not
handle that well. He could have ended that exchange
right
after, a minute. Had he just turned to her and said at the beginning, I want to personally apologize. You know, politics is rough. Let's get back to the issues.
And you and I discussed this before the debate about whether or not Brown would apologize. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's
did
ironic...
Did you say he wouldn't? I forget. Did you predict?
I think some sort of qualified apology.
You win.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that the advice Brown gave, the unsolicited advice Brown gave to Whitman during that second debate in Fresno, you know, on the whole housekeeper issue was, hey, look, if you can't apologize, if you can't own up to your mistakes, say I'm sorry and move on, you shouldn't be governor. And yet when it came time for Brown to apologize, he said, well, my campaign apologized for me, you know, right after, right after it happened.
And I affirm that apology.
Right, reaffirm that.
And only then when Brokaw pushed did he say more. But even at the beginning of that we heard, you know, you couldn't tell what was being said and I'm not sure it's legal to have these recordings. What the, you know, come on. I mean, it just felt like.
He didn't say that during the debate, though, right? That was after, in the post game.
It was just one of those answers that you just thought, man, if he had just said it and been done with it, then it wouldn't have given her the comeback there about every woman knows what this is.
Right.
Although I thought Whitman overplayed her hand with that sound. I mean, everybody's now heard it on the podcast, the ooh.
Right.
Which reminded me of Al Gore's sign. Yeah. In the presidential debate, but maybe
Meg Whitman wasn't sweating like the way Al Gore was.
Anyway, I mean, all of us looked at it. All the local television news ran it that night. Again, everyone else was watching the Chilean miners being rescued. So I guess, you know. But again, did it have an impact on the race? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, and it took Brown off his message. And look, and it really stopped the conversation about Nikki Diaz, didn't it? I mean, you're looking for.
The larger campaign discussion,
yes.
Not in the debate.
And you know, that will be interesting to watch in these last 2 weeks, sort of what we end up talking about. I mean, what are the defining issues of this debate?
Well, it looks like I want to play another part of the debate. If you've got something else to talk about, we'll cue that sucker up too. But I mean, I want to talk about that there was a feeling that Whitman was pivoting to a new issue in this race. And you see it by the ad that came out on Thursday, the Soft on Crime ad. And then and Brown's got his own ads about law enforcement, because that was actually, you know, if we all go back to the crux of what the whore fracas was all about, it was about, you know, a public safety organization and pensions. But again, back to, you know, a law enforcement, law and order kind of thing. So Whitman had this whole part where she was calling him soft on crime.
This is one of the biggest differences between me and the Attorney General, is our point of view on law enforcement. As I said, Jerry Brown has been soft on crime for 40 years. He has been against the death penalty. He has appointed judges, as I mentioned, Rose Byrd, who fought against all 64 cases of capital punishment that came her way. Ultimately, she was recalled by the voters of California because they didn't like her stance. So I think you have to look at the California Peace Officers Association, who endorsed me, the cops of the Police Protective League of Los Angeles. There's no more frontline police organization than the frontline cops in Los Angeles. And they know I'm going to back them up and be tough on crime and fight drugs in California.
That feels like that. And now look at the ad that she has out on Thursday. This ad that has, you know,
15-second.
Yeah, well, the cops talking right to the camera and saying, you know,
we know the truth about Jerry Brown.
Yeah, I mean, is this a pivot now to a new tactic here, or no, pivot, a switch? You know, a couple of weeks out,
perhaps. Although I just don't know how effective this is. I mean. Again, they have more resources to pull on this stuff, but and I know that that the crime issue is a big one for Whitman's campaign chairman, Pete Wilson. You know, he's always a big tough on crime guy, and ran two campaigns in the 90s on sort of a tough on crime message. But this is a very different campaign. I mean, Whitman herself has said this is about jobs, jobs, jobs.
In which case, right now, if you're going to roll out a soft on crime campaign,
Rose Byrd and all these
things. Right, exactly. Have you not already? That's a good point. Have you not, if you're Meg Whitman, already defined the parameters of what your campaign should be about?
And now just shifting here. I mean, you know, is that a sign of desperation, or is that a sign that maybe she feels she has the jobs debate won and is moving on to break off another piece of I don't know. I just don't get the sense that crime is first and foremost in voters' minds, you know, this year.
Well, and Brown also has his own his own endorsements from the world of public safety. I mean, I feel like this week we've played this whole game of who's endorsed me? Well, who's endorsed you? You know, back and forth. And then there was the moment in the debate where, you know, Brown had the moment of the I've got the police chiefs
in my back,
behind me, backing me.
Yeah.
It was a light moment there.
Right.
Brown has his own ads out, not his ads, but the independent group, one of the independent groups supporting him, the professional firefighters and some police officers. And you've got those. And what I found interesting about those ads, you know, these came out right before the debate.
Right.
You know, ones I'm talking about.
Yes, that.
Where you have one of a female firefighter from Davis outside Sacramento,
mm-hmm.
and then a female police officer from Chula Vista in the second ad. Down in San Diego area. And what's interesting about those two ads to me, one, they were women. Coincidence?
Right.
Gee, I think not. Two, they showed these women like with their families, like they cut from their uniforms to like them with their families raising their kids. And then they both say, and Meg Whitman didn't even have the time to vote.
Right.
Which I thought, again, was another carefully crafting this because you heard Whitman's, you know, answers all these months about why she didn't vote. I was busy raising a family and doing this and doing, you know, and here is a juxtaposition of
somebody
these.
Was raising the family.
Well, anyway, but the point is, here is a juxtaposition of that. I mean, you know, so at the end of the day, all of that just kind of seems to, I don't know. I have a feeling it would negate itself somewhere there. You've got one saying this, one,
right.
You know, are the voters right? Are the voters going to pull a lever or mark a button, mark a dot based on public safety?
Well, and what's interesting now is we're seeing the sort of the flurry of attacks from everywhere now. You know, all the big independent expenditure money is moving now. I just saw about $1.4 million from the Prison Guards Union moving into a pro-Jerry Brown campaign. Whitman herself got $2 million from some public safety groups. You know, you mentioned the firefighters. The California Teachers Association has put $3.2 million into a campaign. They're up with a new ad this week.
Just in time for the debate where Meg Whitman beat them up a bit.
Was asked about the unions, right. And you know, it's just interesting about I remember Gary South talking, a former strategist for Gray Davis, talking about Al Checky's campaign in 1998. And he said that, you know, part of the problem with the Checky campaign was that their messaging was all over the place. It was inconsistent. And we're seeing some of that, I think, with the Brown campaign, because the reality is a lot of the money coming in now is it's coming in from these independent groups that are not directly coordinating with Brown. And so you have all different kinds of messaging going. And it gets back to that point. What is this race about? And I don't know if that's the same kind of problem for Brown that it was for Checky. But certainly, you know, there's no sort of clear focus about this race heading into Election Day.
I don't think that it is, just off the top of my head. And I guess here's why. Because Checky was an unknown.
Right.
Having to make a particular case. Brown is having to basically tell the voters, relax. You know me, don't worry.
Right.
I can do this job. I've been around. And the teacher's ad, I mean, I will say that the teacher's ad certainly proves your point in a bit because, you know, the issue of schools while out there hasn't been well talked about. I mean, I think even Whitman saying that it's one of her three things, it has not been it is the least talked about of her three.
Although Brown now is talking about it more, and maybe
right.
we could play that clip from the debate here where he talks about Whitman's tax proposal and how it would affect schools.
I wouldn't totally eliminate the capital gains tax, which my opponent Meg Whitman wants to do. That capital gains tax benefits mostly millionaires and billionaires and would add $5 to $10 billion to our budget deficit, and a lot of that money would have to come from public schools. And I just don't believe that's right.
And you know, Brown hammered that point again at a press conference on Thursday in Los Angeles. Just as the teachers are rolling out this ad campaign, and so I think that Brown does want to that is a piece of the Brown messaging here in the closing days of the campaign.
And I just come back to something we've talked about before, just for a second. But it just bears repeating, which is the Whitman campaign strategy. From my vantage point, seems to have been all along that by painting Jerry Brown the incumbent, we're going to tap into this anger with the status quo and incumbents and everywhere else. You know, whether it is the reminder of him being governor to calling him Governor Brown on the campaign trail to and on. And they've bet the farm on that. They've bet the farm on that working in a way. In which
that farm is worth about, what, $141.5 million?
$20 million more from her this
right,
week as
right,
well, which we
right.
should talk about in a second. But they've bet the farm on that. And I mean, it may work. I don't know whether it will or not. But they haven't even if this crime thing is somewhat of a different strategy, they still haven't gone off of that strategy in a way. Because I want to go back just for a moment to the ad that came out, was it now a week ago, week and a half ago? But it was the latest ad about hide your wallet. Jerry Brown could be governor. I think it was last week.
Yeah.
Even. And they repeated some of the same charges and same accusations. And I guess my feeling is the polls have shown this race, you know, essentially tied. Or, right, you know, worst case scenario for Whitman, Brown slightly up. And that was after millions and millions and millions of dollars of that message. And yet they're doing that message again.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what else they've got. You know, I'm not sure.
No, but that's what's so funny. Think about how we all talked about at the beginning of this race. There were like 40 years of material on Jerry Brown.
Right.
Massive opposition research effort from the Whitman campaign. You know, Jerry Brown's old talk show on KPFA where he said wacky things. And,
right.
You know, and on and on and on. And yet all they've really kind of come back to were the same bullet points about Brown as governor. The surplus. The, you know, the tax increase of the gas right. tax. Which, you know, and you can pull out things that are true and not so true out of all of that, but that's it.
And the Brown campaign's main counter has been to sort of cast doubts about Whitman's ability to tell the truth. I mean, that we've seen that theme again
Which
and again in a new
ad. Is also a new ad.
You
saw that ad
yes.
out today, the polygraph yes. ad from Jerry Brown.
Well, there was the polygraph ad from Jerry Brown, and then there was also the endorsement ad where they talk about the San Jose Mercury News endorsement, sort of a scathing indictment of Meg Whitman.
To which Whitman's campaign comes back and says, well, they've only endorsed Democrats.
Right.
But anyway,
well,
and on and on and on and on.
Yes.
Yeah, and so it feels very uncertain. Let's talk about the money for a minute because you mentioned that or we referred to it. Whitman put another $20 million mm-hmm. of her own money in, which brings her up to 141. Sorry.
0.5.
Ah, you're counting.
Yes.
I should be counting.
Yes.
$141.5 million of her own total spending then is going to be somewhere in the magnitude of what, about $160 million, mm. 100 or so?
Yeah, 160, 170, something like that.
You brought up an interesting theory about the $20 million, right? Because we found out about it right as the debate
right.
was ending
Smack
on Tuesday night.
In the middle of the debate.
Yeah.
Yeah, how about that? Well, you could spin it one of two ways, but it certainly is a way to bury any sort of money story. I don't know if these money stories
hurt her. Because
it's
not a separate story then from right. the press about the money, because if we're going to do it at all, we have to
it's
fold it into
the debate
coverage.
Right. And so, look, I don't know if these stories mean anything anymore. I mean, I find the money on all sides kind of numbing. You know, you look at the massive IEs moving now and just the overall spend. I mean, the spending in this race is probably going to come close to $250 million. I would imagine by the time you count everything up. And certainly if you add in the Poisoner campaign, I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That really is. And I think it's one of those things you cover it day to day and you chronicle it and you write it so many times, you kind of get desensitized. But if you can pull back for just a minute, I mean, wow. Wow, $250 million on a campaign. I mean, that's just... It's
and yet you get the feeling that the voters still don't know what they want to do, are not terribly happy, and that the race could go either way. With all of that money on the line, the race could go either way.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you've got these high profile events for Brown coming up, Clinton this weekend.
Are you going to San Jose?
Probably not going to San Jose.
Lucky.
Too much overtime, you know.
Yeah.
Bosses can't afford it.
Tough. Plus, it's football Sunday, so you know.
Ooh, that's right.
Yeah.
My direct ticket awaits
yes.
on DirecTV. But Jerry Brown, Gavin Newsom, Bill Clinton on stage in L.A.
Today.
First. Yeah, first in L.A. and then in San Jose. Today Thursday or today Friday?
Today Friday.
Since we're taping on Thursday, I get so confused.
Yeah, I try.
And then Obama comes to Los Angeles
at
end
USC,
of the month.
On the 22nd.
The 22nd,
Friday, a week from today.
Another week.
Yeah.
And that's another joint Democratic appearance, not
yes.
a Brown-Obama specific kind of thing
no.
or anything like that.
Boxer will be, and Michelle Obama is coming, or did she already come out?
Well, she's in the First
Boxer.
Lady's women's conference thing. She's speaking at that, which is another
right.
fascinating event. We're getting ahead of ourselves on the calendar, where Schwarzenegger, Whitman, and Brown all appear on stage at the same time.
And Matt Lauer.
From
where
the
in the
Show.
World is Matt Lauer?
He'll be in Los Angeles.
Long Beach.
Long Beach.
Yeah.
What do you make, by the way, too? We didn't talk about this, but this just gets back to the race. Here we are. We're recording on Thursday. No surprise, podcast audience. Where Arnold Schwarzenegger tweeting from London?
Yes.
Set talk about it.
About the hour the pubs close, if you do the math.
Well, he'd started off on pensions. I think the backstory here is there was a good piece, I thought, in the Riverside Press Enterprise, calling out a colleague of ours, Jim Miller, who covers the Capitol, talking about how Republicans from the Inland Empire, some of them, had not voted for the pension reform deal that came up during the budget, and having them try to explain that.
This was also written about in The Skinny this week in Capitol Weekly.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry.
But Jim's piece was
Jim's
very
piece
good.
Was a little more fleshed out than The Skinny, because it is skinny.
Yes.
And Jim's
250
was
words.
Wider.
Yes.
And so Schwarzenegger fired back, both through his spokesman and then kind of through tweeting about people who wouldn't put up votes for pension reform. And then what happened? It's something.
Then a liberal tweeter from San Francisco asked Schwarzenegger what he thought of, and this was how this tweeter described it, as Whitman's decision to sell her vote on pensions to public safety, making the point that. Implying that Whitman had simply Whitman's pension plan calls for moving people from a defined contribution to or defined benefit to a defined contribution to a more of a 401k style pension, except for public safety employees,
which is also at the root of the whore controversy, because it was also back at the whole whether or not
that was this the was, reference.
Yeah. Whether or not this is political expedience or whether it's principled policy that she believes public safety officers deserve a different kind of pension. And so that's the background for the tweet.
And so this tweeter asked Schwarzenegger what he thought of Whitman, quote unquote, selling her vote in that way. And Schwarzenegger responded I can't remember exactly what it was. Was it like selling anybody, or it's horrible when anybody sells out, or something like that?
You got your iPhone there. You,
I do.
I'm making you find it on there. What was the tweet? What's the tweet?
So somebody asked Schwarzenegger what he thought of Whitman, quote, selling her vote to the police union, and Schwarzenegger replied that, quote, it's appalling when anyone sells out. That's via Twitter. And one thing about this governor you're going to miss is that he does make news on his Twitter feed. You know?
So whether it's photos of him lifting weights with the
in fire rubble
with the prime minister of Russia,
right,
or the president of Russia, or whether it's
or the Soviet Union, as some may say,
exactly right. And on and on and on and on, right? Or you have to watch Arnold's Twitter feed, and so That is not surprising in one way, which is that we have long heard that, Arnold Schwarzenegger is not a huge fan of Meg Whitman.
Yeah, we don't have that. Well, nobody has said that to me on the record. But
no, but I guess my point is
you get the sense.
Yeah, I want to be careful to say you get the vibe. No one has laid it out with me in so many words, but you get that vibe from those close to the governor. And it's not surprising, too. I mean, look at his intent of his centerpiece of his legacy, AB 32, which is being challenged by a ballot measure. And she doesn't support the ballot measure, she does support a suspension of AB 32, which brings me on something on the debate. What I found interesting in the debate was she talked about AB 32, we need to freeze it and fix it. You know how she came in, obviously, with this phrase, we want to freeze it and fix it, and that it allows for this. I don't think AB 32 has any language about fixing it. And what does she mean, fixing it? Freeze it is the suspension that you can do to, if economic forces merit, to suspend the climate change law. But fix it, I don't know that we have asked enough questions yet of her or her campaign, but what she means of fixing it.
Right, whether that could be through new executive orders or new legislation.
And that's something that Arnold Schwarzenegger would probably not be pleased with, which gets me back to this October 26th event at the First Ladies Women's Conference. I mean, if there are two people there on that stage who seem more at odds with each other, it's Arnold and Meg, and not Arnold and Jerry.
Yeah, we'll see. And the tenor of Whitman's campaign, I mean, Whitman's campaign has not been shy about trying to distance her from Schwarzenegger. So, But I guess the pubs close early in London, right? They close around 9, 10 o'clock. I've never been to London.
Early pubs closing in London? That just seems to defy the stereotype.
They open early and close early. Okay. So it was about the time the pubs were closing that Schwarzenegger sent his tweet. Coincidence?
Are you implying?
I would never.
All right. So we had a lot. We got a lot going on these days.
Yes.
It's a busy time.
Can we call the podcast Bangers and Mash? Can we do that?
I like.
I don't know what it means, but.
You've never had bangers and mash?
I have. I just don't know what it would mean as, you know.
Well, the relevance would be to this exactly. Podcast. That would be way tangential.
Toad
but also,
in a hole? No.
let's stop there.
Okay. Because
I could just keep going.
Yes.
But I won't. And neither will Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly. And I'm John Myers from KQED. Thanks for your patience. We'll see you next time.